My mom was a nurse, and I remember when I was a kid, I'd visit her at work sometimes. She worked in this huge hospital, and the way I always thought about it, especially with my little kid brain, was like it was a small city. You had all these people and all this infrastructure and computers and servers and everything. I mean, thousands of people literally worked there. It was like a giant, elaborate beehive, and everyone had their role in this complex system, from patients to nurses to doctors to support staff to the folks who kept the computer servers going.
Well, to Newfoundland and Labrador now, as the province has been hit by a major IT outage. It is hitting the healthcare system in Newfoundland and Labrador. It is also forcing the cancellation of many appointments, including some cancer treatments.
It's October 30th, 2021. In Newfoundland, Canada.
This is an extraordinary situation affecting the healthcare system all across Newfoundland and Labrador today. But sources are telling CBC it's a ransomware attack, although the minister didn't have any information on that or whether a ransom had been demanded.
Recently, the Canadian government released a report concerning this hack. All told, over 200,000 files were pulled from three separate Newfoundland Health Authority servers. Over 2,000 social insurance numbers, personal patient and employee information, health records, it totaled about 200 gigs worth of data, some of which dated back two decades. The hackers, who were part of Hive, it was a well-known malicious ransomware group, accessed the health authority's virtual private network using stolen credentials. It's unknown how they got their hands on legitimate creds. It could have probably been phished via an email scam or some other social engineering play. Who knows? Anyway, once they got these credentials, they got in, and they began to scoop up data, pretty much undetected for 2 weeks, and they quietly escalated their access privileges. And then, on that fateful October 30th morning, those networks, the ones that facilitate that complex dance of medical procedures, patients, and staff, well, it all ground to a halt when the Hive ransomware tool locked up the system.
They won't, I think, exactly say how much it cost them.
They won't even say if they paid or not.
And so, on one hand, we can understand if they paid, because the healthcare system in the middle of COVID pandemic, but also they're not saying if they paid or not, based off of what their consultants have told them. The going belief, as far as I know, is that it's said to not say if you have been the victim of a ransomware attack because it may lead to you being attacked further. But I think it's more dangerous to pay because that shows that you're a willing paying customer rather than not paying. And so, regardless of the debate if saying you paid or not leads to more attacks, the fact that one paid or not is what leads to more attacks. And so this is why governments need to be more involved to stop this from being a case in the first place, to stop people from having to choose between having to recover their systems or paying a ransom to criminals.
This is Cloak & Dagger, a podcast about OSINT, technology, and global conflict. I'm MJ Benias. This podcast is powered by Sapper Labs Group. For more, visit www.sapperlabs.com.
I'm Alexander Rudolph. I'm a PhD candidate at Carleton University. My research largely deals with the four structures and doctrine of cyber conflict.
Alexander is a fellow with the Canadian Global Affairs Institute. They're a think tank that focuses on foreign policy and world issues. I'm actually sitting in their Ottawa office with Alexander right now.
So, understanding how countries build offensive cyber capabilities into the military and then how they use this. And outside of that, a lot of my research these days is specifically on Canadian cyber defense policy.
Alexander's an expert, and his jam is basically tracking and monitoring cyber attacks and ransomware groups, and then taking all that information and helping with the development of policy and government strategies. So the hack in Newfoundland is only one example, but it's an important one. Outside of all of the data that was stolen, Hive and some of the other ransomware groups out there in the wilderness of the internet, well, they don't always work alone. There's a geopolitical connection to all this.
I think the ransomware landscape is a messy web. Generally, a lot of the big actors based in Russia, with tacit support from the Russian government, with Russian intelligence being managers of some of these groups, and I have it on good authority that some of these ransom groups will give kickbacks to these officers just so that they continue their work, basically like a criminal organization. And so part of the United States' strategy of persistent engagement is recognizing that ransomware operators and many cyber criminals are being used by Russia as an instrument of the state.
Right, so the Kremlin handles hackers like Tyler Durden handles Fight Club. There are a couple of basic unwritten rules. The first rule of being a cybercriminal in Russia: you will not hack a Russian language site. The second rule of being a cybercriminal in Russia: you will not hack a Russian language site. The third rule of being a cybercriminal in Russia: if the Kremlin, its military, or intelligence services need something from you, whether it's help, a favor, or even a portion of the loot you plunder, you will comply with a smile. Follow those three rules and you will never see the inside of a Russian prison. So, to deal with this understanding between criminal enterprise and the state, persistent engagement becomes a necessary strategy. And a quick glossary check here. The idea of persistent engagement is to basically get out in front of your adversaries before they can attack you. So it's not totally about going after adversaries, but it's rather about anticipating their next moves and exploiting that to understand the target and their vulnerabilities. It's proactive and not reactive. Countries like the US and the UK, well, they have strategies in place for stuff like this. For example, the United States Cyber Command has a program called Defend Forward. And they even do this fun thing where they work side by side with other nations in these quote-unquote hunt forward operations, where they basically team up and just go looking for malicious cyber activities. Canada, though, well,
there's very little engagement with industry and the cybersecurity community. And this goes in cyber defense, but also the wider cybersecurity and information security community, as it's something that CADSI.
Yeah, CADSI. It's the Canadian Association of Defense and Security Industries. Basically, it's an organization that bridges the defense industry and government.
Has voiced for multiple years now and multiple reports saying that the government is just not doing a good enough job in meeting or having actual good outreach with cyber sector broadly, because they just aren't understanding the quick obsolescence rate, that the pace that developments come in the sector are outpacing the procurement. And if you have a government procurement process that lasts 12 months, your technology that you're trying to sell 12 months ago is now going to be outdated. And the procurement processes aren't matching this at all and aren't changing. And this is kind of a reflection of the broader culture of that it's not addressing this from a holistic standpoint of understanding that cyber defense isn't just a niche area, but rather something all of government has to be concerned with.
Right. I mean, The Hive ransomware attack in Newfoundland is this perfect example.
I recognize myself as just a very small person here in Ottawa, that there are a lot of others doing similar work that I'm doing that are pushing for better procurement, and like industry has been pushing for that for years. So I'm not going to embarrass myself in trying to attempt that, as I'm still very much a novice. But I think some of the good work that is being done is by academia, that especially with recent news about the foreign interference, you have like Stephanie Carvin, Thomas Juno, Leah West, these individuals that have been writing about this stuff for years and are now getting a lot more attention because despite one's views about foreign interference right now, it has to be recognized as a problem. And the problems with the system is the system itself that needs to be changed to develop into a modern national security apparatus. And the academics I mentioned have done it very well and are doing a very good job at trying to advocate that. I would say one thing that's constantly hurting is Canada's lack of willingness to contribute to persistent engagement is reducing Canada's being recognized as a serious actor. And this is despite Canada having fantastic capabilities for this at CSE, that international operators have told me when talking about the role of Canada, unprompted, say that Canadian operators are really top-notch. So the issue becomes, why isn't Canada allowing them to contribute and support these operations? We've seen in recent years that they have been contributing to this, but it seems to be on an inconsistent basis and only when pressured by allies.
So, I mean, you have this situation where successful cybersecurity isn't only to deter attacks. Like, you can't just be a brick wall. But you have to basically get into the flow and understand how the waves and tides and currents move. You have to be like some sort of infosec monk. This reminds me of that scene in The Matrix when Neo tries to bend the spoon with his mind.
Do not try and bend the spoon. That's impossible. Instead, only try to realize the truth.
What truth?
There is no spoon.
There is no spoon?
Then you'll see that it is not the spoon that bends, it is only yourself.
For contemporary cyber defense, an in-depth awareness of the ecosystem on some weird there is no spoon level is essential. I can imagine all this is hard to wrap your mind around. Moreover, this seems really far away for a lot of people. There's this weird disconnect for some. Just because it's happening in cyberspace, it seems less important. But fundamentally, it isn't.
So targeting these ransomware operators and taking down infrastructure that may be being used maliciously or illegally by them, or other methods to not only take down how they're operating, ensures that your average Canadian will save money because they aren't, spending money, their own money, to recover from an event. Their taxes aren't going to pay ransom, as it remains, I think most ransoms are paid to this day, which it's being heavily hinted now that Newfoundland paid their ransom a year or two ago. Even though they won't admit it, but we all know by not admitting it, they did.
Just to be really clear here, the provincial government of Newfoundland has publicly stated that it cannot and will not disclose anything about a request for ransom for security reasons.
So, and then companies as well, a new breach every other day leads to the theft of your information that can lead to the identity theft, to losing additional money. That broadly, it's about defending oneself in this new landscape.
Right. I mean, the Hive ransomware attack in Newfoundland cost the province about $16 million, with $5 million being paid out to victim credit monitoring services. And with roughly 100,000 people or so being notified that their personal data may have been stolen, that's a heavy cost. And that's just one single attack. In December last year, a ransomware software called Lockbit hit the Sick Kids Hospital, disrupting their services, delaying medical scans and tests, and just causing a whole boatload of issues. In February of this year, Indigo, the bookseller, was hit by a ransomware attack that also utilized Lockbit, and it cost the company tens of millions of dollars in lost revenue. Moreover, this isn't always just some group of criminal hackers, but groups that often receive support from foreign adversaries like China and Russia. It's not just about money. It's also about state power.
And I think it becomes a point of where if the government's actually going to respond to this and if the investigation is actually going to motivate some changes or not. And that, I think, is the part of why I refer to as kind of Canada as an inflection point right now, as it recognizes that there is a problem that exists in not just the problems that Canada's facing, but how Canada's responding to it. And if Canada is not responding to it by changing the systems that just aren't working anymore, then Canada's not going to be able to address these threats as it should.
Thanks to Alexander Rudolph for coming on this episode of Cloak & Dagger. I've put links to his work in the show notes. For more updates, news, and content related to intelligence and technology, make sure you check out www.cloakanddagger.blog. If you like the show, make sure you click subscribe and, you know, share it around. Post about us on Blue Sky and Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, or X, I guess, whatever it's called now. Heck, even crack open that old MySpace account and toss it up there. You know, you could even put it on one of those weird Telegram channels that's probably just a Russian psyop. You know, it all helps. And please remember to leave a review and give us a rating. We'd love it. This has been Cloak & Dagger. I'm MJ Benias. Thanks for listening.